This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
The good news is that UI is not expensive. You can hire a part-time designer to really kind of like that has experience to do this, to make some really nice mock-ups of your screens and your developers can implement it. So definitely do the minimum required, but 100%, like you should never kind of go overboard with that. It's a really easy thing to kind of get stuck into and make small incremental changes and waste your time all day. So
absolutely. And on the other spectrum, you cannot walk into a client with a hand-drawn, you know, messy notes pad, right? You do have to try to put something on paper because that conveys as well your approach. This is also true when it comes to pitch decks. Put a little bit of work into the pitch deck. I mean, go spend a weekend doing a course on Udemy, for God's sakes. And you can learn a hell of a lot. And that's time well spent, because the deck you're putting together is going to be shown to customers and investors, and you want to make sure that at least it conveys the message properly. If you fail, people only give you a very short attention span to a deck, maybe looking at, you know, the deck in just a few minutes and deciding if they want to do a deeper dive. So you've got to realize, if that's how it's going to be consumed, make sure you catch them from, you know, with a wow at the beginning. But focus more on the overall flow. And I don't mean flow as in the narrative. I mean flow as in how you want the information to be consumed.
Yes, for sure. And you know, it's interesting you point that out, because I would say that there's almost like a kind of like a table stakes, like a minimum line that you have to hit on every single part of your business to at least, seem real. And you know, that's obviously on your functionality, on your user experience, on your website. It has to look somewhat decent. And people are out like, a lot of the websites now look really nice, right? Like that wasn't the case 10 years ago. Like you could get away with a really crappy website that did something really cool. The same goes for your social media presence, for the way you talk to customers, and for, you know, like you have, and the good news is that these things don't take a lot of work to kind of just get up and running and to a satisfactory level. So it's definitely worth doing to just kind of get everything up to like a, you know, that acceptable level of polish or, you know, professionalism.
Yeah, and I like the idea of how you phrase this, where there's so many areas to focus on, and you touched on a few, right? Do you figure out where you want your magic superpower to be, is what I'd say, and realize you can only choose one or two things you're going to do really well. So, you know, if I were to look at your company, right, you know, are you going to put your energy into building the best website? Are you going to put your energy into, you know, how you integrate with third parties? Are you going to put your energy into how you do search engine optimization and, you know, search engine marketing? Pick a few things and own it in a way no one else can. Yeah. But when you get started, try to figure out if you can outsource this or if you can use existing things to just to bring it in. When you see something working, that's when you double down and you make it the best. So you can at least proudly say, here are the two or three features we have that are absolutely killer that no one else can compete with that we've invested in. But it certainly can't be like the color of your button and how we've created the best ever looking button. You know, it needs to be something where you want to, you know, in your case, I'm guessing, you know, you guys are a trusted source for landlords across North America now. And they rely on the data you give them to decide whether they should let a tenant in or not. That is critical. You've got to be the best at that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, it is very easy to kind of want to spend a ton of time just making everything great. And I would say that even kind of goes into your business strategy as well. The scope creep, I think, is a real killer, man. Like, I think a lot of people, you know, see the opportunity come in, especially as it starts to gain traction. They're like, oh my God, customers are also asking about this and they're asking about that, and we should probably build this feature and that, and maybe open up this new business line. And then you realize that you just have very limited resources. Like, that's the name of the game when you're a startup, is how far can you stretch yourself and what can you do with the limited resources that you have? And truth be told, you can't really do more than one thing really well, right? And you're right. You've got to figure out kind of what is my differentiator? What is it that people are really coming here for? And that should be the one thing that I really kind of need to focus on. And then everything else just needs to be good enough, right? Or at least until you get to that Series A stage where you have more resources and ability to kind of, you know, support multiple products. But it just, there's so much, I think, there's so much you need to think about to kind of like, to be competitive in this space, that even a simple product like a tenant credit checking platform, you're looking at what your competitors are doing, and there's so much thought and kind of like customer, it takes a lot of energy and time and effort to kind of just make one thing work, that you can't possibly do that across three different things. So, you know, you need to be very focused on the one, you know, differentiating factor that you have, and not kind of stretch yourself. Otherwise,
make sure your customers appreciate that differentiating factor. There's no point choosing to have a superpower in an area that isn't going to make an impact and your customers don't value.
Absolutely.
So let's talk more about the problems that exist in the space today. Why did you start this company?
Yeah, it's a good question, Zane. I think we noticed a trend. We saw that what was happening in the legislation environment of a lot of different provinces across Canada and in many areas in the US as well, is that as the real estate market was getting more and more expensive after the 2008 kind of crash, basically, you know, home prices were going up, you know, they were going up 10-20% every year. Rents were going up, affordability and was becoming a real issue. Vacancy rates were at all-time lows. So what was happening now was that there was a real kind of political force, you know, on the municipal and kind of provincial side or state side to basically protect tenants because they felt vulnerable. But what was happening now is that by having these type of limitations, such as, you know, for example, lengthy kind of eviction procedures and stuff like that, a lot of these kind of legislations came at the cost of the landlord. And as a small independent landlord, which, by the way, these guys own, I would say, 60-70% of all rental stock across North America, but the average landlord only owns 3 properties, right? So they're not sophisticated, you know, investors. They're not doing this as their full time job. This is just like a kind of a nest egg or a retirement investment for them, and it is very important for them to have their rental income coming in order to support the high mortgage payments that they need to pay for the very expensive assets that they own. So we saw there an opportunity to really come in and take away the risk that a lot of these lenders were taking. And the risk was mainly tenants that didn't want to pay the rent and just might even damage their property. So we looked around. Yeah, it's a good question. It depends. It's very, coming from a kind of consumer finance background, is that, you know, the overall number might be low, but depending on the region, it could be very significant, right? So I'd say across the entire rental stock, and if you're looking at Class A properties, it's probably below 2%. Maybe Class B, it's closer to 5%. And you definitely need to take that into the account. But the real problem is not the probability. It's the fact that you have no way of spreading that risk. If you're a large property manager, you know, you've got 100 plus units, you know that maybe one or two are not going to pay every month, but that's okay because you've kind of factored that in. To you, it's just a P&L item. If you're a small landlord and you only have 3 properties and one or two of them decide not to pay the rent, now you're stuck with $3,000 mortgage payments that you need to kind of come up with, and you don't have the rent to help you support that.
By the way, as we speak now, as we're on the path to mass vaccination, this is still a very real problem. There's many landlords who are burdened with a mortgage and have a tenant that isn't paying rent, and legislation protects that tenant. But at the end of the day, the landlord is going to suffer. And it's all because of the risk exposure. And ultimately, you will see bankruptcies. You will see people selling in distress. And all of that could have been avoided by doing, you know, better tenant screening.
Well, and not only that, but we talk to landlords every single day, hundreds a month. And I'll tell you right now, a lot of folks, especially due to a lot of the state or province eviction bans, a lot of the folks are just leaving their homes empty. They're afraid of renting out their property to tenants, because they think that they have no recourse if they just decide not to pay the rent. And that's unfortunate because, like I said, we are in a low vacancy environment right now. And by offering, by taking away some of that risk and having more rental stock come to the market, eventually what will happen is that the prices will come down, which will benefit the tenants ultimately. So it is a problem. At the same time, our premier, for example, came in and made an announcement 2 days ago that, you know, they're looking into putting a hold on all evictions in the province now that we've gone into full kind of lockdown mode due to COVID. And, you know, again, the challenge there is that it is the landlords that are left paying the price for that. And it's difficult to do from the legislators' perspective as well, because if they come out here and say, hey guys, don't worry about, you know, not paying the rent because we're going to support the rent payments or subsidize rent payments for every landlord out there. Well, what do you think is going to happen next, right? It's just that every person that doesn't want to pay the rent is not going to pay the rent. So they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
This problem perpetuates quite frequently because of a certain behavior that investors have. And investors cause this, I'd say, because of a rush to generate quick results. You buy a property that's got low occupancy, you want to fill it no matter what. And sometimes there's so much pressure on a property manager to achieve a certain occupancy rate that they're willing to be more lax. They'll take the first applications they get. They'll be a lot more forgiving when it comes to, you know, red flags. Just because at the end of the day, it sounds like an excuse when the investor hears from the property manager, well, we're at a low vacancy, but we want to ensure we have the right quality tenants. Well, then the investors think to themselves, hold on, we've got a pro forma budget we need to hit. I've got investors I need to please. It sounds like an excuse to me. But the fact is, you fast forwards a period later, maybe a year or two or even a few quarters, and something bad happens and that tenant doesn't pay. Now you're in a worse situation. Now you've got a unit you're paying for. You've got to figure out how to get rid of the tenant. You've got damages that are going to accrue, and it's a write-off, and there's going to be more CapEx you're going to have to spend to improve the property.
You're pushing a lot of that risk and kind of like headaches down the road, right? By doing that. And I think that the most effective way of actually preventing a lot of these headaches is to just do the best that you can in terms of screening these tenants. And especially now more than ever, that you don't have a lot of recourse after delinquency or default happens. You do really want to invest that time up front. I recognize that. I mean, we work with a lot of property managers at API into our platform that just like ask for one number. And they're like, hey, can you give me one number I can look at and so I can make a decision, right? And I get where they're coming from. We're working as best as we can to kind of bring in all the different risk factors into one number. It's always difficult. It's hard to replace that conversation, checking references, talking to the previous landlord, talking to the employer to get a feel for kind of what their economic and situation and what their behavior is like. But we're doing the best that we can. I think that at the end of the day, it has to be kind of a bit of a collaboration between both the human judgment aspect as well as kind of the numbers. I find that oftentimes people kind of tend to go to one end or the other. You have landlords that basically just talk to the customer and make a gut decision. That you should never do that. You one thing that you should know is that some of these tenants that are professional kind of like tenants that consistently take advantage of landlords, they're con artists. They're very good at coming across as really good tenants when you first meet them, right? So definitely want to check their eviction history. Definitely want to check their criminal background and their financial history.
New investors who buy real estate often fall victim to this, where it's unfortunately a rigged game. You're buying a property, you think it's safe, it's got high occupancy. Well, the person managing the property previously just filled it with anyone they could, knowing full well that this is a disaster waiting to unfold. Now, you're here as an investor. You bought your first real estate. You're really happy. You thought it was a safe deal. And guess what? It might be 100% occupied, but your delinquencies and your true effective gross income is very low. And it's because you relied too much and you have to go and look at the data. So what can a new investor do when they're buying a property? What matters? Is the rent roll enough? Do they need to go overboard and recheck?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question, Zen, and I think I can provide some kind of tactical advice there. The kind of like the prevailing logic now or kind of like the kind of, yeah, like the myth is that credit scores are the all and the most important thing. After looking at about 10,000 leases so far, we've come to the conclusion that credit scores are actually not as important as you think. And I think to a certain point, it's almost kind of like a bit of a spectrum, right? The average tenant, across US and Canada has a credit score of about 630, and 630, depending on some financial institutions, that's seen as subprime, which is definitely on the lower end of the scale, right? But because they don't have a home equity, that's why they tend to have much lower credit scores than the average person. Now, once you get, I would say between 500 to 650, 630, you can still have very good tenants in that credit score range. So I would definitely discourage against avoiding tenants below the 600 credit score, which is, again, you're getting into the subprime. Once you go below 500, there's something really wrong with their credit. Like they've got a lot of outstanding debt, they've kind of had a bankruptcy, or they really have issues. So I would definitely stay away from folks below 500. But what we found is that what happens now is that a lot of landlords will pass on tenants with low credit scores. So those guys are going to have a really hard time finding a place to rent. But when they do get a place to rent, they tend to be much nicer to their landlord and really pay their rent on time, because they want to avoid going through the headache of having to find another place again, right? So it causes a bit of an inverse kind of incentive there, whereas folks with really good credit scores, they have a lot of options in the market, so they don't really care. So for that reason, credit score is not the most predictive thing. Now, what you want to look at is affordability. That's the most important thing, because when it comes to affordability, the rule of thumb in the market is 30% gross household income or rent to gross household income ratio. And I would say you can probably even go up to 40 or 45. That's for example, for a rent guarantee, for example, we have a cutoff at 45% rent income ratio. And the reason for that is that after paying all of your taxes, you know, debt payments and living expenses, do you have enough left over now to cover the rent? That's really the question. And more so, do you have any additional disposable income that you could put away as a rainy day fund in case you lose your job, so you're still able to make those rent payments and get through that rough patch or rough period? That's really kind of the most predictive variable that we found when it comes to to paying rent. And obviously, you know, other common sense things are to definitely check their employment. Is it stable employment? Are they going to be around, especially now during COVID, right? You want to look for things that, hey, could that job be impacted by COVID? Could there be a layoff in the near future? Have they been there long enough so that, you know, they're a senior hire and less likely to be furloughed or laid off? These are all kind of things that you should really kind of study and pay attention to.